since 2020, it's become abundantly clear that we're all perfectly capable of doing our work wherever we are. There is a lot of value in FaceTime. There's a lot to be said for building personal connections with your colleagues and for simple training purposes of sitting next to someone versus having to schedule a time to answer their questions. There's a lot to be said for that. But there's got to be some sort of happy balance in there.
You're listening to the Legal Mastermind Podcast with your hosts, Ryan Klein and Chase Williams, the go-to podcast for learning from the experts in the legal community about effective ways to grow and manage your law firm.
Today in Legal Mastermind Podcast, we have Marissa Simmons. She's an attorney recruiter at Beacon Hill. Welcome to the Legal Mastermind Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And for our listeners that aren't familiar with who you are, what you do, can you give us a brief background?
Absolutely. So I graduated law school in 2008, which was a terrible time to hit the job market. I ended up very luckily having a job as an attorney after I took the bar exam. I practiced for 6 years as a consumer bankruptcy attorney representing debtors in bankruptcy, which is every bit as challenging as one might think it is, especially when the market is in an absolute shambles. So 6 years was probably 5.5 more than I really needed of that practice. I fell backwards into recruiting, as many recruiters do. Seems to not be a first career for a lot of people, especially in the executive space. It's certainly not a major in college, so you kind of find recruiting. I guess based on your network, you get recruited, maybe. I fell into recruiting after I had my first child, and practicing was clearly no longer going to be it for me for a number of reasons. I started actually recruiting in the legal space, but recruiting temporary and contract and some full-time legal support staff. I worked with amazing people. I was terrible at the job, though, and I was very lucky that they didn't fire me. And when an opportunity arose to move into attorney recruiting, I said, maybe that would be a better fit. They let me give it a shot. And here I am 8 years later doing it. So that was the right move to make. But I was very lucky to be given that opportunity. So I work with attorneys who are seeking to make a career change for any number of reasons, or sometimes not seeking, and I convince them to do so. I work with law firms and companies looking to hire attorneys in a full-time capacity only. And our services are free to attorneys. Our bills are paid by the companies who hire people. And I personally specialize in placements throughout the Southeast, everything between DC, Florida, and Texas. But Beacon Hill is a national search firm. I have colleagues all over the country. And I manage a team of 10 attorney recruiters who do the same job that I do, including myself, 10 of us, all over the Southeast.
You made an interesting point about being an attorney assisting with, you know, recruitment and placement for other attorneys, because it reminds me of like 10 years ago. Been doing SEO for a long time, and it's one of those things that if it's maybe still nebulous nowadays, it certainly was even more 10 years ago. And you have recruiters that I don't even know how they do it. They're like, tell me about how you do X, Y, and Z. And they wouldn't even know like what I could say anything. And they're like, that sounds great. And then they pass it along. Do you think that there's, you know, that kind of value with like speaking the lingo and being able to connect with a, you know, an attorney, being able to place attorneys?
Very much. I was just talking about that at a meeting this morning, but the company that I first joined when I got into recruiting only hired former practicing attorneys, or former attorneys generally, as attorney recruiters. My company now doesn't require that, but just at this point, based on my network, that's generally what I've hired in my group. And I think there's a lot to be said for making a personal connection with your candidates. They know that you've sat for the bar exam. They know that you've spent your life billing in 6-minute increments, and you understand what that means. The business model overall of a law firm is very unlike a corporate kind of business model. And whether you're an attorney or you're another type of staff, having experience with that business model is so helpful in understanding the business of your clients. Same with legal groups in-house. The in-house legal department is a different kind of function than a lot of other business departments for a company. So I think it's really helpful for those connections. And also when I tell someone, you know, that I'm also a lawyer, but I don't know your particular practice area, I think that they come to the table a little bit more open to explaining to me what it is that they do, because they know that I'm kind of halfway there. You know, if I don't know that specific practice, I'm already there. It really helps with building trust and understanding the industry and what you're doing.
And are you working with attorneys that are fresh out of law school, or is it more like seasoned?
Generally, we're not able to help attorneys who are not practicing yet. The reason being that most attorneys, hopefully, have graduated law school and passed the bar exam, which is a super difficult thing to do. Unfortunately, you actually know nothing about being a lawyer, and companies generally aren't willing to pay the fairly expensive fees to train someone when there's a whole bunch of entry-level people, all of whom are highly trainable individuals. They're really looking for, you know, the purple squirrel with green wings and red eyes. And sure, if I don't find that, they're not going to pay me to find a red squirrel with green wings and red eyes. It's not worth their money.
I asked that question in favor of our younger listeners, so right now they can just skip this episode. Sorry, y'all.
You know what? That doesn't matter. Start networking. I network. I help out at my law school. I network with those people all the time. And it kind of serves a couple of purposes. The one is sowing the seeds for the future, right? I have a pipeline in a couple of years because I met someone, you know, years ago. But it's a really good way to give back and to be networking. And I never say no to just a conversation with someone, even if I know I can't help them, because at a minimum, I'm adding to my network, and you never know where that might lead. Even if that person doesn't end up being a candidate or client, you never know who they know or who they'll pass you along to. It's just always a good idea to have those conversations. So even if you're not currently a potential candidate for a recruiter, it can't hurt to expand your network ever.
So one of the major, I don't want to say issues, but trending topics is how much money is being thrown around right now. Like just everywhere, right? So especially, and if you want something right now, you can pay for it. And that includes people to work for you. So that's gotta be really difficult for firms that maybe can't afford to pay, you know, 50% more of what they're paying 2 years ago for the same employee. And I know that's in every industry, it's kind of happening right now. So my question is, what are some ways that firms can compete to attract great talent that are above and beyond salary?
There's a lot of things I think that firms can do. I think that, you know, since 2020, it's become abundantly clear that we're all perfectly capable of doing our work wherever we are. There is a lot of value in FaceTime. There's a lot to be said for building personal connections with your colleagues, and for simple just training purposes of being sitting next to someone versus having to schedule a time to answer their questions. There's a lot to be said for that. But there's got to be some sort of happy balance in there where the more senior people can still be available to the more junior people, but where the junior people can be comfortable coming in, comfortable making those connections. If you don't build those long-term connections, what's your career going to look like in a few years? So I think one of the number one things is figuring out what the happy medium is for physical FaceTime. A lot of people actually want to go back to offices because they kind of like miss the human interaction that we used to want to get so far from, which has been good. I think everyone has now proven we can do this from far away, but we also, there's value in being together. So one piece of it is to find your balance. A lot of people don't want to be full-time remote, surprisingly. So I think that that's one place. It's a very easy transition that companies and firms can make to figure out what that FaceTime might look like, because we know it doesn't have to be 40 hours a week, or, you know, law firms way more than 40 hours a week in person staring at each other's faces. So that's one way, is to make it work for the people that are supporting the business, figure out the FaceTime that works. There are long-term things, especially for more junior people, but I think for anyone who doesn't have a retirement plan currently, everyone has long-term goals and expectations. So talking to potential employees about how you're going to help them meet their long-term goals, you know, that's very important. Coming into a salary right now is great, but how many times have you heard, you know, it can be worth taking a step or two back in order to pave a new path forward? You have to connect the dots. What's the forward path look like? How are we going to help you get to that next step in your career, whatever that might look like, whether it's working with an associate on business development, or is that someone who may want to long-term go in-house? So, you know, really getting them exposure with clients and in that way, helping to move forward people's careers. That's not an immediate financial incentive, but for them, long-term has both a personal incentive and a long-term financial incentive. The bonuses this time of year, everyone's talking about bonuses. Those are probably going to be not the same as what they looked like in the last year or two because there was so much retention money being thrown around. But the bonus is important, but it's not always important to everyone. I actually just had a candidate who was offered a relatively low salary with a fairly good bonus system, which would have been, I think, fairly lucrative, but he had childcare costs to meet, and the base salary, low as it was initially, wasn't going to get him to paying everything he needed to be able to pay for. So he negotiated and got rid of entirely of the bonus and brought up the base salary a lot. So sometimes if you have the flexibility to tweak the way people are compensated, that can really help. I think overall, the cost for the firm is going to be the same at the end of a year that they would have paid if they had just left the bonus structure in. But for him, the bonus structure wouldn't work because of his monthly expenses. So something like that, find out why the compensation as it's written may not work for you. How can we fix that just to make that work? And it may not cost you any more money over, you know, the course of the year, whatever it may be. So digging in a little bit with people to find out what they're looking for and why can really help to attract those people without spending more money. There's always fun type of benefits, you know, help you pay for your gym membership, or we bring a masseuse in once a quarter, or, you know, we bring our animals to the office if there's no allergies, or a lot of companies and firms where people travel, you know, where they will, I forget the name of the service, it's some cute name, but it's like an overnight delivery service for lactating mothers who need to get their milk back home while they're out of town. And so little services like that, that just really make a huge difference, can be huge. And providing little things like that can be really big, and it's not expensive or may not cost any money. And it's just a matter of finding what's going to motivate your employees or potential employees, to stick around and be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the like less quantifiable or concrete kinds of benefits, you know, having a conversation and say, you know, we have more of a work-life balance, you're going to be mentored, you're going to be working with partners, you're going to, like a lot of these things that aren't like easy as being like bonus, salary, you know, some of these other things they expect. Do the potential employees, do they get any sort of peace of mind from it being like bound to like a contract or a written agreement? Because, you know, people can say certain benefits all day and then join the team and 3 or 6 months in, it's like, this isn't a benefit that you communicated. It's not actually happening. Do you find that that happens in your recruitment?
Not particularly. I don't necessarily find that something that's written down doesn't get honored. More the other way, if it's not in writing, how are we going to guarantee this is going to happen? I think it's important to put those things, especially if you're in the legal industry, right? Everything has to be in writing for us. So I think, stick it in there in writing, whether it's in the offer of employment or in a benefit summary, so that it's clear there for people to see. If they don't see it there, they're not going to trust they're going to get it. They shouldn't.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, because there's some of those other things that make one work environment more appealing than another when you're having those casual conversations, like, you know, we're easygoing. We're not going to, you know, work you 100 hours, but if it's like not documented, I don't know if they actually will document those kinds of suggestions, or they're just kind of say it very passively, because things like that do get thrown around in any industry. And I don't know if in legal it's more documented for these reasons.
In terms of hours, it generally is. There's an expectation that you hit a certain number. Sometimes you become bonus eligible for hitting that number exactly. Sometimes you have to go over a certain number to be bonus eligible. Sometimes there is a specific formula to figure out what that number might be. And sometimes it's just, we'll let you know when we get to the end of the year. So that is a little bit more challenging. I think it's incumbent upon the employee and the candidate when they're in a candidate to make sure they're asking those questions, not just to whoever might be their boss, but their peers. Go get a drink, go out of the office, have a meeting with those people out of the office, see if they're people you actually want to spend your time with, because we spend way more time at work than we do with our, you know, families who we actually chose to be with. So get that out of the way, but get into a situation where if you're out of the office, you can ask real questions about that. You know, what does it really look like? Give me an idea. What's your day? You know, in most practice areas, there's an ebb and flow to the work. What does it look like when you're slammed? What does it look like when you're not so slammed? You know, how do the partners balance that? And ask about managing up, you know, how do, if you're supporting multiple partners and you have this competing deadline, how do you communicate with them to, you know, protect your ability to get the work done and make sure expectations are set? And how do they take that when you tell them, I don't have time for this, or I need an extension on this deadline, or what? How do they take that? So you can get some idea from current employees what those things look like. So, you know, walking in, what it might be like, or you can take that information and choose not to walk in at all. But nice to know that information before you get there.
So for our listeners that are considering hiring someone such as yourself, Marissa, what are some questions that they should be asking their potential? I don't want to say headhunters, but would you consider yourself a headhunter?
Yes. I think that's the Mad Men version of the phrase, of the word.
What are some questions that I should ask when I'm trying to consider who I should hire?
So the typical questions are, you know, what makes you different from your competitor? You know, I told you before, we have mostly former attorneys and legal people in my group. So I think that that's very important. Someone who really understands the industry, things like that. So really getting a good understanding from a recruiter you might work with, their experience with your industry, their experience with this type of role. For instance, I don't really work with attorneys who are like full-time document reviewers, right? So like people who are employed by a large firm to be on their document review staff. That's a permanent placement at a law firm of a lawyer, but I could not decipher between one doc review and attorney and another. And I'm sure there's differences. It's not my bread and butter. I would ask someone else to help with that. So asking what their experience is with that particular type of role. Also like partners versus associates. Some people will focus. So important to know that they really understand the need. Asking about who their team and who they're working with. Are they solo? Are they having to split time among many clients all on their own? Are they working with a team? What's the makeup of the team and how do they divvy up work and how do they work together? You don't have to know all of the details, but a general understanding that you're getting buy-in from the whole team and not just that one lonely person is working it alone, to know that you're actually getting the dedication of service that you really need in order to find someone. I think also giving the recruiter information about your business and what you're looking for, and then just on the spot asking them, what's your plan? How would you handle this? How quickly, how concisely, how reasonably can they give you an answer that sounds like they know what they're doing? You know, I think it's really important to ask all of those types of questions.
This kind of made me think of a question that I haven't asked before, as far as recruitment and, you know, working with an employer to find additional people for their team. But like, how often are people coming to you telling you this is what I'm looking for? And you're saying like, something's off. Like, do you like actually need that person? And maybe even assessing what their current organization is and saying like, you need this instead, like you're just not really on track and this is not going to solve the issues you're having internally.
So big firms generally kind of have it down. They know what they need. It's a machine. You can either plug into it or not. Small firms are very different. There's a lot of things. You're not just talking about checking boxes on their from their resume. What can they do? There's a lot of other stuff involved there. Sometimes firms will think they need to hire, and in fact, they're not utilizing the people they have. to full capacity. So you do need to do some digging and really get a good idea. You don't want to play someone and then find out a couple months later they didn't have the work to support them. So you definitely need to do some digging. I think small firms appreciate too taking a consultative approach to really understanding the business and what they're doing and what they're looking for out of this person before you just jump in on a job description. So really understanding a lot of those things becomes important, and I think helps to build the relationship with the client, and they know that you're not just worried about getting a warm body into the spot. It's about assessing their business need and addressing it correctly. Some companies are very good about it, especially those with more structured legal departments. Companies who are hiring their first lawyer, you've got like a CEO who's not a lawyer, you have a CFO who's not a lawyer, you have an HR director who's not a lawyer, who are all people who are excellent at their jobs, and they don't know what they're looking at when they look at a resume of a lawyer, which is another reason why I think having someone from the legal industry do legal recruiting is very helpful. But you know, you can talk to them and get an understanding for what they need. Sometimes they think they need, you know, we're a real estate company, so we need a real estate lawyer. Well, what you really need is a corporate lawyer to like run the business. They can hire outside counsel doing the real estate stuff. The real estate's going to take up 30% of their time, though. If you hire a real estate lawyer who can't do the corporate side of it, now you have to hire a corporate lawyer too, and you're overpaying, or you're sending out a lot more work that you could be in-housing. So definitely getting a really good understanding for what they're trying to get from this position can help. And yeah, there are times I say, you don't need a lawyer. You need a paralegal. Call my colleague. Or I think you need like a temporary person. Here's another colleague to call. Or you're looking in the wrong practice area entirely. Let's refocus. And here's why I think that. So they can understand why, you know, and hopefully they appreciate that advice. And sometimes they don't. And sometimes that deal works out. And sometimes it does not.
Well, it's just the benefit of being, you know, consultative with that. And I think that people see the value in saying, not just fulfilling every single request. You know, there are people who say, I'll do it, and you know, you're going to pay me, and that's great. But I think there's a lot more value, especially long-term, of taking a step back and evaluating it, as you're saying. You would think that would pan out into long-term relationships, so people wouldn't be upset with you evaluating their decision-making, but I suppose that they would be.
Long-term, it works out very well. That's when clients come back to you because they trust you, because you have taken your time and they know that you're not just going to take their business because it's there. You're actually going to do what's right for their business too, even if it means I don't make money right this minute. It's worth it.
Marissa, thank you so much for your time today. For our listeners that want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach out?
Find me on LinkedIn. My name is Marissa, M-A-R-I-S-A. My middle name is Leeds, which I think is on there. And then last name is Simmons with two M's. It is not Simons. I believe there are other Marissa Simmons, but I am the only one with gigantic glasses and big curly hair. So fairly easy to find me there. I have other socials, but I try to keep those personal. LinkedIn is the best way, or certainly Beacon Hill. We are Beacon Hill Staffing. We staff in a variety of industries, although I specialize only in legal. And feel free to reach out. And if you don't need legal help and you need something else, I can find the person. So don't hesitate, even if you know I'm not the resource for you.
Thanks for listening to the Legal Mastermind Podcast. If you're interested in working with Ryan and Chase, please email mastermind@marketmymarket.com. Make sure to join the free mastermind group for growing and managing your firm at lawfirmmastermind.com. Ryan Klein and Chase Williams are the managing partners at Market My Market, one of the top legal marketing companies in the United States.